You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up on Wisconsin Life, we'll talk to an Eau Claire guitar maker who's been building and repairing guitars and ukuleles for decades.
First, legendary boxer, activist, and humanitarian Muhammad Ali died last Friday at the age of 74. The tributes have been pouring in for the man who once proclaimed himself as the greatest. Based on the response, it would be easy to think that Ali was a universally loved hero all his life.
But our next guest says that white America was reluctant to embrace the most loquacious black man in sports and only fully did so after Ali was largely stripped of his voice due to Parkinson's disease. He also says that describing Ali or any black celebrity who passes away as someone who transcends race essentially washes off the celebrity's blackness and the influence it had.
Lawrence Ross joins us now. He's a writer, lecturer, and author. His latest book is called Blackball, The Black and White Politics of Race on America's Campuses. He recently wrote two pieces about Muhammad Ali and race on the root. Lawrence, thanks a lot for joining us.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
Before we dig into the specifics, what was your response when you heard that Muhammad Ali had passed?
Well, it's one of those things where that, you know, intellectually you think to yourself it's going to happen at some point in time, particularly because he's been sick for so long. But then it felt like the end of an era. It's like, you know, whenever you have someone who's a giant who passes away, it's always more than just the actual person. It's kind of like the end of an era of a stage in life, I guess would be the best way to say it, in terms of someone who's going to, you know, who takes away a lot of history as they pass away. So it was really, really to the heart. It really hurts you to your gut because he represented much more than just himself. He represented a lot, particularly in the African-American community.
And you write about him in the last decade, maybe two decades. Muhammad Ali did become this sort of universally loved figure, not just among certain communities, but across the board. But was this something that we forget maybe was not always the case during his career?
Yeah, one of the reasons why I even wrote the piece for The Root, actually both of those pieces for The Root, is because what was kind of percolating through the African-American community zeitgeist was this notion that, Americans love to rewrite history, and we'd like to make it as pleasant as possible so everyone, loves everyone, you know, when they die. And that's fine as a tribute, but it's disingenuous. And what, one of the things that we forget is we never really actually, you know, go to the true starting point of where famous people actually began, particularly for African Americans. And it wasn't universal at all in terms of white America embracing Muhammad Ali when he first came up, particularly in 1964. In fact, it wasn't to be really historically accurate. African Americans weren't universally embracing of Muhammad Ali. But there were real reasons that can't be skipped over due to the fact of how and why he got to a place of real prominence, but began with a foundation in 1964, starting with his changing his name and then going into the Nation of Islam and its association with Malcolm X. Too often what happens is that we skip ahead and we decide we're going to create a mythological beginning for the person that we all want to embrace, and say from that point on is where I've always loved him, without actually going back to the point in time that it actually makes you question whether or not you actually do love all parts of the man.
What do you think is important that we remember about the difficult parts of Muhammad Ali, or the parts that were more controversial when he was speaking up and had the full use of his voice?
I think one of the things that we should really, really, truly understand is that Muhammad Ali was a reflection of an African American society that was really finding its voice at the exact same time, and one of those particular elements was the idea that African of kind of like the shackles came with kind of having to modulate your in terms of determining who and what you were going to be in America. And so Muhammad Ali was the very first, one of the first, to actually say, no, I'm not going to be named. I'm going to be by Cassius Clay. I'm going to change my name to Muhammad Ali. And why did I do that? It's not simply just as a name change. I'm shedding off a name that I think reflects something that does not belong to me. I'm going to change my religion to Islam. All those things are not just in terms of just his own personal experience, but it's a reflection of African America actually deciding that in this civil rights era, we're shedding off this Jim Crow era. We're going to be free. We're not going to be second-class citizens. We're going to speak our mind. And you see that within the civil rights movement with Malcolm X and Stokely Carmichael, and even going on later on with Martin Luther King, speaking beyond just the civil rights movement, but also talking about the Vietnam War. And so you see the African American community finding itself, finding its adulthood, but also having to live in the shackles of white supremacy in the country and systemic racism.
We found a clip of what you're getting at here of Muhammad Ali talking to students in 1967. He didn't go to war. He refused to go. And here he is explaining this to a group of students.
I'm not going to help nobody get something my Negroes don't have. If I'm going to die, I'll die now right here fighting you. If I'm going to die, you my enemy. My enemy is a white people, not Viet Cong or Chinese or Japanese. You my opposer when I want freedom. You my opposer when I want justice. You my opposer when I want equality. You won't even stand up for me in America for my religious beliefs, and you want me to go somewhere and fight, but you won't even stand up for me here at home.
Now, that's a voice and saying something that you can hear the crowd, the students around him, the energy going up, because what he's saying is confrontational. He's saying, you're the enemy. The white people are the enemy. I'm not going to go to Vietnam and fight someone who's not my enemy.
It's the selective memory that we have when we talk about a person like Muhammad Ali, because what he's trying to say is that, yes, you know, in terms of the macro, in terms of particularly in the late 1960s, where you have pretty much, although it's a multiracial, you would say led by a lot of white college students in terms of the Vietnam War protests in 67, 68 or so, that's on the macro for those white students. But what Muhammad Ali is telling them is that, wait, yes, I may be on your side, but I'm also indicting you in terms of me being a second-class citizen and what happens in this country. And too often what happens is when we talk about history and we do a retrospective, that part gets erased. That part gets erased because that's the difficult part. That's the difficult part, particularly for white Americans, to actually look on and say, well, did we actually take responsibility for what he was actually saying? Did we actually solve those problems that he was actually saying? And the answer would obviously be no. And when the answer is no, that means that we can't just simply just pour all our adulation into, you know, to Muhammad Ali and say, well, he transcended, you know, what was going on. And, you know, I loved everything, because we didn't really take a lot of action to actually deal with the problems that Muhammad Ali was actually articulating. We just picked and chose by saying, well, we really do like the fact that he stood up against the war, which was a courageous act. But he also had words behind why he was doing that.
You can hear that he's not really interested in being liked at that point, of being any sort of ambassador for anything. He's sharing his voice and his ideas, even if they're controversial at the time. And when do you think we sort of lost that thread of that part of Muhammad Ali and who he was?
Well, one of the things I think happened is that, you know, like all natural athletes, when the stage actually begins to, you know, move away from them being an athlete, typically they have lesser voice. I mean, that's not unusual to Muhammad Ali. But Muhammad Ali also had the affliction of Parkinson's. And so the more he actually became afflicted neurologically, one of the things that happened is that people could project upon him what they actually thought and saw him. And I say in my article on The Root, that 1996 was kind of like the epitome of it. We see a giant, which we can all acknowledge as being a giant in athletics, and we can see as a giant, you know, within, you know, in humanitarian. But we see a person who is afflicted by Parkinson's, you know, lighting the torch. But right at that point in time, what happens is that suddenly everyone, regardless of their you know, their political stripe or whether or not they agree with the things that Muhammad Ali believed in, it becomes almost, and I hate this term usually, but it kind of fits. It almost becomes politically correct to actually say that Muhammad Ali is their personal hero. But if you dig deeper into, you know, what Muhammad Ali really believed in terms of the type of equality he actually believed in, it would be completely different than what people who say that they believe him to be a hero, what they actually believe. And so it becomes very disingenuous, and he becomes a very convenient figure to project his whatever people's beliefs of who and what he was, he becomes a very convenient figure. It reminds me, not a direct analogy, but it reminds me of how when Robert E. Lee died, and in the South, they built thousands of monuments to Robert E. Lee. And what they were able to do is this ivory statue, they would basically, people in the South and ex-Confederates, they would project upon Robert E. Lee all these values and ideas of who and what he was, which didn't necessarily have to be to correlate to the history. It just basically talked more about the people and what they wanted. And for Muhammad Ali actually became, a lot of times for white America, this kind of this place where they could kind of say, well, we actually like him, you know, but we don't want to delve deeper into, you know, the things, the real things that he was talking about when he actually could say, when he actually had a voice. They don't really want to delve into those things, and those are the hard things to deal into. And African Americans, on the other hand, remember everything that he said, and at the same time are saying, you know, these are some of the same issues that we're dealing with in 2016, the same things that he said in 1967.
Lawrence, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, it's been a pleasure.
Lawrence Ross is a writer, lecturer, and author, and he joined us to talk about Muhammad Ali and race. He's been writing about that for The Root.